at KO4 in UE. It is a lot of work, and, you know, Dad normally does it, but I don't know, Larry. He just seems like he has never really fully recovered from COVID, and it's been, 2 years now. He's lost a lot of stamina. And then, you know, we had the little incident a couple weeks ago with him. And it's been, I don't know, about 2 weeks now. Well, a week. It's been a good week. He's just hadn't been out of the house. He gets on his border patrol and he'll go down there and feed the goats and the chickens. That takes about 10 minutes. Well, about 30. And then he's back in the house and he's exhausted. So I'm not sure. I'm sure that's got something to do with his low blood count, but it's slowly coming back up. But I'm hoping he'll pick back up.
It's true, and I only say this because of personal experience. I haven't read this to be true, and I certainly couldn't talk for as many people as I am going to insinuate. When we get older, we may still have plenty of vitality and vigor, but then that first thing that reminds us that we're mortal, that we're only here for a while, it not only changes our body in the fight back to health, but it also reminds us of our how frail and vulnerable the human body is. I think we're made well for the time that, while none of us have a lease, we have an expectation, you know, of a certain lifespan, let's say. I say to Donna, maybe I shouldn't, but I say to her from time to time, you know, gosh, this is going to sound awful. From time to time, I'll say, well, what are you going to do when I'm gone? You know, you will have to do this, you know, when I'm not around. And I don't think I should do that, although in a way I think I should do that. What do you think? That we should remind our spouses, we men, that they are made better than us and they will last longer in the human body. And, well, what do you think?
Anna and I have ever said that, what are you going to do when I'm gone? And I'm not sure we're there yet, but that is a good question. I'll have to ask her that when we get done talking. That'll be the topic of discussion when we bed down tonight. What are you gonna do when I'm gone? I'll be interested to hear what she's got to say.
Well, no, I wish you hadn't said that. You know, the topic that you discussed just before retiring, no matter how long you've enjoyed time together, it might not be so morose. So a suggestion as to how this might be important. With computers and phones and layers of security and all that for any device in this house, I have developed a special file that is encrypted that she has a key for. And it is all the things that would tie up my loose ends, you know? And information about things that are pertinent and she should know about. And I think that's that's a courtesy that we should pay one another. And she takes all care of all the finances. I don't know anything. She is, you know, that's, this was her working life expertise. And so it didn't make any sense that I should insist on paying all bills and keeping all the accounts and everything. She just does so much, so good a job at that. But if it should be that she go first, there will be, I'll be on, in a world of hurt. I really will, not only for the loss, but for the void that that creates in a life that I will have to continue for a period of time. It goes both ways. You know, you have your values and your responsibilities in the marriage, and she has your, hers. It is something that you might ought to talk about sometime, but choose your time purposefully, okay? Choose it wisely, and you know, be prepared to say, well, I am creating a file for you. I mean, if I'm any example at all, create a file, and you can go to the machine and share your machine, you know, the one thing password with her, okay? And then all the rest is opened up in that one encrypted file. It just makes sense these days. Life is complicated. KK4JBQ.
I know when, you know, on the two deployments, we, you know, we were required with our family to go through a portion of JAG and have a will made. So we, you know, we have a written will that's probably out of date. Matter of fact, I know it's out of date right now. But, you know, just having a conversation about it outright, when you're in that kind of environment, it's kind of serious. You know, you get to the point, you do this with the tractor and do this with the insurance and do this with the truck and do this with the house. You know, that's the, straight to the point. But I've never thought about, you know, creating a file or something to, you know, put all my junk in so she can, you know. But I'm like you, Larry. I really don't control that much. You know, I'm just kind of here, and she does all the bills and the money. So as far as the equipment goes on the farm, it just has to be up to the two boys, I guess. Or Abby. I don't know if she's gonna want to deal with tractors and things like that, but. I'm sure they'll make the right decision. At the end of the day, it ain't gonna matter to me. They can do what they want to with it. I'm gonna be, you know, I don't wanna be sitting in a urn, but I'm gonna be scattered somewhere, and it ain't gonna matter.
There, yes, sir. You'll be auditioning for the Celestial Choir, as they say. And, I don't know. So, I think I've examined the age difference between us, and, it's startling to me. It really is just how old I am. You see, as we understood early in our marriage, we were going to be having children, and it does change in that regard. In the family area, your life has been quite different than mine. And oh yes, we have a will, but it's very simple. You know, if I go first, it's all yours. If you go first, it's all mine. It simplifies things quite a bit. But just like you, my wife is the chief financial officer of this little corporation here. And it frees. I was never all that good with money anyway, to just tell you the truth. And not that I took any risks. I learned early never to make a bet. I had a friend. He was the first in our neighborhood to drive an automobile. He was maybe a couple years older than all the rest of us. And I liked him a lot. His name was Wayne. And he had a nickname, Mud Dobber, and we shortened it. All of us called him Dob. Anyway, Dob was, he wouldn't tell you what to do. He would kind of show you what to do. So he would raise a bet with me just all the time for a period there. He just bet on anything. And at first, I'd say, okay, I've got a quarter, you know. And it was never anything serious, right? I got a quarter. I can risk that. And he'd always win. And finally, I said to him, I says, Dob, listen, I don't understand. You always win. And he says, well, yes, that's the point. I never bet until I know it's a sure thing, and you're going to lose. That taught me a lot. If I don't know I'm going to win, I'm just not going to bet. KK4JPQ.
I never was much for gambling. I think probably the highest thing I've ever gambled maybe was $5 over a Clemson Carolina game. And just so happened that year Carolina won. So down in the shop on the Hightower Wall of Fame with all of the, you know, screw-ups that me and Dad have done over the year. Every time we mess something up in the shop, we put it up on the Hightower Wall of Fame so we can all see it. There's a $5 bill taped up there. So I tell Daddy, I'll never go broke because I got that $5 bill down there in the shop. So, but it's up there on the Wall of Fame. So I think that's the highest thing I've ever gambled with.
KK4JBQ with KO4NUE. Yes, I suppose learn your lessons when it doesn't cost you that much. You know, I lost several quarters with Dob, and I wagered, you might say. I lived in Michigan for a period, and they had a state lottery. And I was working for a retail organization up there. And I went to the employee center there where there was a window, and this is where we picked up our paycheck and stuff like that. And they sold lottery tickets. And I think it was $2. And I was living on $3 a day. I'd done a few numbers, and this is what I could do to live. The car I was talking to was costing way too much, and I wasn't living in high style, but rent was high there for me. So this is what I had, and I could spare $2. And so I scratched it's one of those scratch tickets, you know. And I scratched the ticket, and I didn't win. And I handed the ticket back to the lady that gave it to me, and I says, I'm done. And I was serious about it. It was a disappointment that I wanted to take to heart. I didn't want to brush it off and say, oh, well, next time. No, I lost. And I had no expectation of winning. It would have been a total surprise, the clouds would open up and the sun would beam right down on my face if I had won anything. So I guess it's fortunate I didn't, because I quit doing anything like that. Others who have been bitten by that bug I know it's a serious thing, and I'm not making light of issues that others have with gambling. But I never did it. Never wanted to. Got taught a lesson early, and I think I'm fortunate for it.
Before NUE, so yeah, that's always a good lesson to learn. Like I said, fortunately though, I never have been really bad to drink or gamble or anything like that. You know, I just always seem to get into mischief. I never really got in trouble with the law other than speeding ticket, but just mischief. I stayed in some kind of something all the time as a kid, you know. Kept mom and dad worried all the time, but it's always, you know, sneaking out to coon hunt. I never did sneak out to do nothing bad. I didn't care about, you know, cruising or hanging out at the parking lot at night, and I just wasn't into that. Dad gave me a Bluetooth for Christmas one year. He bought it for a hog dog, and it didn't turn out. So he gave it to me to coon hunt with. And I just sneak out the bedroom window and had a wheat light, a big battery you wear on your belt, and then a big cord that comes up your back, and you know, the light mounts on your hat. And we'd stay out all night, like, you know, and sneak back in. And I did it for a long time, didn't get caught. Well, I got caught one night. Let me let my radio drop, Larry. So, Larry, we had the attic fan in the house. It's probably 4 foot by 4 foot, and we'd open all the screen windows at night, and we'd turn on the attic fan, and that thing would, you know, in the summertime, it'd suck air all through the house, and we didn't run the air conditioner that much. Well, it made a lot of noise, so I'd sneak, when I get ready to sneak out of the house, it was on a timer, and you could switch it to a position that was hold, which it would stay, the attic fan would stay running all night. But Daddy'd always set it for 90 minutes so he could go to sleep. Once he went to sleep, you know, the fan would shut off. Well, when I was going to sneak out, I put it in the hold position. So when I came back in from hunting, the attic fan was running, and it drowned out any noise I'd make trying to get back through the window. Well, I don't know what happened. I didn't set it on hold, or they turned it off, or I don't know what happened. And as soon as I stuck my head in the bedroom window, the attic fan wasn't running, and I just, you know, I dropped something getting in the window. I don't know what it was, but that's game over.
Hate it when you get caught. Well, that was nothing terribly serious, of course. But I gotta believe that some people who did not experience moments like that, where their reality was not checked, they weren't self-disciplined, and the world around them ignored them. You know, those are folks who have, they don't have the advantage that I think I had. Now, I was raised in a time, I don't want any sympathy here, because I just don't want it. But I was raised at a time where we got whippings. I mean, we got whippings. And it wasn't just switching the legs, which my grandma used to do. She would catch us in. There was a dairy there, and it's not what you think. It was like a hole dug in the ground, and cement blocks stacked around, and it would just back under the earth. So you put, they had milk cows, and you just wanted someplace cool to keep it. There was no refrigeration. You just wanted some cool to keep it. And underground is a, you know, constant, oh, what is it, about 58. It would keep a few days longer. But we were playing around in the dairy, and that just wasn't allowed. It wasn't allowed. That was a sealed-up place, and I didn't understand that. So she got after my little legs and wore shorts, you know. Not a good idea, but I was wearing shorts that day, and she switched my little legs just raw. Bang, 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 bang. Yeah, so, but my dad, when he'd get after us, and Mama would let him get after us. She didn't have the energy. He would take a belt, he would take a leather strop, and just beat on us. Now, I'm looking back, and I don't think that's right, but I do think I learned things the hard way and the sure way. Not every child would benefit from that, but I think I did. I do. I think I did. KK4JPQ.
So, yeah, I've had my fair share of whippings. Daddy never went looking to whip me. But when I messed up, he got me. And he'd always take me in the bathroom, and he'd close the lid on the toilet, and he'd sit on the toilet, and he'd talk to me for 10 or 15 minutes. we'd go over whatever I did and why it was wrong. And then he always, every single time, he'd always tell me, "Now, son, I need you to turn around, and it just won't let you know this is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you." And, man, he just teared a lot into me. And I tell you, one thing I hated too was, wait till your daddy gets home. Oh, man. Boy, that was 4 or 5 hours of misery. You know, I'd see the old blue Chevrolet come around the curve out here. we had gravel driveway back then. We had a real long driveway. And that, you know, asphalted it, but for years and years and years, it was gravel. So he'd come around that curve, and he'd punch that blue goose, that Chevrolet, when he'd come, and it'd just be a trail of dust. And, man, I knew I saw that trail of dust. It was whipping time, because Mama never forgot. She'd tell him. And, man, he'd take me in there in the bathroom, and I'd get the speech, and then, you know, but it'd be over. Once he whipped me, it was over. It was, you know, Mama would fuss and nag about it, and Daddy'd always tell her, "No, hey, he's paid the price. Be quiet." So that was the end of it. You know, I'll give him that much. He did it right.
Yeah. KK4JBQ with KO4NUE. I do think he was right, though, and I'm sure you would agree. It was hurtful. It hurts your spirit to have to discipline your child. But a child that grows up without discipline, free-reigned, it's a toss-up how they're going to turn out. It really is a bigger gamble to grow up without discipline, without serious correction. Yeah. Well, enough of that. I got some stories sometimes. Maybe we can share it on the telephone that are, you know, of more teaching moments. it's just, I mean, my parents, if you just imagine them here today and everything the same, our neighbors would call social services. I mean, they'd be in prison for the stuff that they did. But I lived through it, and I'm not sure that I wasn't permanently damaged in any way. But the lessons that I learned, they came in as a cost, a slight cost, and most of it was anticipation, like waiting for your dad to get home. And when he was, did you say a Buick? Anyway, when the car would roll up, I remember a moment like that, and I was looking every which way for an escape route. I mean, I remember the little dance that I did. I can't go this way. I can't go that way. I can't hide over there. I mean, it was a moment of confusion. I actually remember that. You grew up okay, and we turned out all right. You know, it'll be all right. But it's not a choice that parents can make today. KK4JBQ.
KK4GAT, that was a great philosophical lesson, I tell you what. But I'm down here at the lake. I just caught a 13-inch catfish, and I'm about to fry that son up and eat it on good now. I can't wait. We got a good lake here, and we got a good weekend. And I'm about to fry that catfish up, and it's going to be some good eating. K4GAT.
K4GAT. KO4NUE. You ain't messing with them yellow pepsies, are you?
K4GAT. Repeat that one more time, K4NUE.
I said, you're not messing around with those yellow pepsies, are you?
There's a Pepsi lot down here. Diet Coke.
After that, well, I hope you enjoy the catfish. I'm glad you're having a good time. Oh, man. All right, Mr. Larry, pick it back up.
Good break, a good... We should make a turn and... pick up another topic. I do wax philosophical every once in a while, especially, I think when you turn, and you'll experience this in about 20 years, Jed, when you turn a certain age, I don't know what it would be for you, but for me it was 70. You do more remembering than you look, than you do anticipating. You know, I don't anticipate. I mean, I know what's ahead, although none of us know what's ahead. I know what's coming, and I know what's behind me, and there's more behind me than there is in front of me. This is a coming to reality. So you have to tolerate old people, and I don't think myself old. I don't act old. I don't talk old. I don't think so. But we take a break in life at some point, and we start to evaluate how we did and who we did it with. And the memories sometimes are sweet, and sometimes they're miserable to recall. But it's just something you do, I guess. I'd hate to miss this part. You know, to die young and miss this part. Isn't that awful?
NUE. So, Lewis, my oldest, changing topics here, he's working part-time at, I think it's Anderson Hospital, one of the hospitals down there. And this week they had a patient come in, had his hand wrapped up in a big old bandage, you know, and Lewis takes them in and, you know, gets information from them and gets them to the right place if they're able to walk. And he says, well, take the bandage off, let me take a look at it. And this guy was drilling with a drill press and had on gloves. And the drill caught the glove and just wound his hand up in the drill press. And Lewis said, he just bones poking out everywhere in the man's hand. And he says, I work back there with a bunch of older ladies that do all, you know, paperwork and all. And he said, they were back there Googling what a drill press was. They know what a drill press was. So once they got on Google and saw what it was, they all went, oh, I see. So, but Lewis said he had messed the man's hand up. I can just imagine, you know, some of the drill presses get some horsepower behind them. You're not going to stop it. And I just, man, that's just brutal to even think about.
Talk about correcting. I had to correct the cat. Anyhow, yeah, that reminds me of a day I spent on the job. And I did one of the basic, you better never do that. I held a workpiece in my hand and used a hand drill to drill a hole in a block of wood. And the drill bit went right through my hand. I looked down at it, and it's the last thing I remember. You can't control it. When that comes on you, I'm here to tell you, you can't control it. I fainted dead away. I woke up, and one of my fellow employees, who I would learn, picked me up off the floor and took me to his car and the emergency room. I do believe I never felt grateful like that before, and I don't think I've felt grateful like that again. Do you know what I mean when somebody picks you up when you're totally out of it and does you a good turn like that?
Talking about one of those Yankee drills, you know, spring-loaded, and the drill bit always breaks or it punches through the object you're drilling while the spring is fully compressed. That or a handheld drill motor, and oh, well, this is just a piece of sheet metal, you know, I just poke a hole right in it. Yeah, been there, done that. Scars all over my hand. You know, my hand's pretty beat up. You know, machinist and welding and all other stuff I've done with them. You know, that's arthritis really bad in my wrist, and one middle finger on my right hand's just trigger finger. It hangs up. I mean, it's just awful. But yes, I have poked the drill. Several drill bits into my hand, and that's an awful feeling when you realize what you've done, then you got to get it out, and then when you look down and squeeze it and you see that little puddle of blood pop up, it's I'm out. I have to lay down because I get lightheaded. I can't stand blood. Can't stand it. And to see my own, I'll have to sit down and lay down because it just, yeah, I know what you mean.
Traumatic things. The sight of blood does not bother me. I have a mechanism in it, and I'm awfully grateful for it. If something should happen to someone I'm with, I'm right there. I'm totally there. I'm totally focused, and I can help. I've learned that. Some people can't. They see anyone else hurt and they're gone. You know, the panic rises in them. It's one or the other, maybe. Either a panic rises or a desire to reach out and help if you can. It's one or the other, and I have the good part. That's been tested a few times, and I'm awfully grateful for it. I don't think I had any control. It's not a choice I make. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, Larry. But, like I said, I can't imagine, you know, getting caught up in some of those bigger machines. You know, if the guy's wearing gloves, I'm assuming that more than likely he was in a plant somewhere or someplace that required him to wear gloves, which that's not always the best choice against with rotating machinery. A lot of places think it is, but it's really not safe at all. If you got a glove on, and by the time it gets you, you know, and it gets through the glove, you're in real trouble. If the gloves are off and, you know, it starts to bite you, sometimes you can get away from it because you feel it a lot quicker. But I just, you know, you get a drill press 5-6 horsepower on it, that's, you know, it's not going to stop. And it's I can just imagine what he saw. KO4NUE.
For JBQ, I will ask for a pause while I change batteries. For NUE, KK4, JBQ.
All right, I got the first set.
Got hot. Hot in my hand. I've been thinking. It's been a while since I've had the radio on in the car. And that is a nice Kenwood TM7 something or other, I forget now, but a decent radio, and I can just bring it in here and plug it in, you know. It's got a nice fan on it to cool itself and all that, and a head unit that detaches. So I really think I'm going to work at that. Don't you think this HT work is not the best? I'm proud that I can get there, and I think I'm running on about 3 watts now. I'm thankful I can get to the repeater. I've always had this marvelous, you know, it's where I am more than what I'm doing. You know what I'm saying? Been happy about that. But these HTs get hot in your hand, and I am long-winded, I'll admit it. Well, so tell me what Anna's been up to lately. Haven't heard anything from her. I think it's been a while since she's called Net. Just not keeping tabs or anything, just just curious.
So it's end of the school year, trying to wrap things up for the school year so, you know, all the students and all the teachers can see the light at the end of the tunnel. That kind of, you know, I call it the tunnel syndrome, where you get close enough to the end where, you know, you don't want to do anything else and you start, you know, acting up. So she's been dealing with all that, but, you know, school's coming to a close and that kind of deal. But I think the radio you're talking about is a 771. And, that is a nice radio. That's what I keep up at the deer camp. And I would set that thing up in the back bedroom, set it up on crossband repeat, and I'd sit in my chair with the handy talkie on low power and crossband repeat off of that 771 and do exactly what I'm doing now, sitting in my chair while the radio, you know, does the heavy work.
You got it right. 771, that sounds right. It is a fine radio, and I've only used it maybe it's got 2 hours on it. You know, only when I was in the car and only when I was away from the house during the net. You know, that's all I ever used it for. It's a dual band, and it does, as you say, cross band repeats and all that. I'm told it's got a good sound. Kenwood always has had good audio. And, you know, that's all you can ask from the radio, you know. But HT's just, they're adequate. I'll give them that. And especially this Elinco, it's served me well. I got, I think it may have been the last time you and I spoke. I not only wore out a couple of batteries, but I had to switch to one of my Baofengs, the radios that I use for extension speakers. I tried not to transmit using those, but I was in a hard place, and I picked up the first one I came to, and whenever on receive, it was horrible, just horrible. And you know, I'm plugging into the same antenna that I'm using this one on, but the receive was horrible. The audio was good on output, I was told, at least, you know, you can't hear yourself, so I have to trust whoever I'm talking to. So I switched off that one to the other one, and it was all right, and I finished up. All this radio jostling, just, and the Kenwood, it's small, you know, it's a small footprint, and I should have done it a long time ago. But this corner, my shack is in. We have on the floor plan. It's a sunroom. We use it like a den. It's a small room. It's probably 10 by 12. And so my shack could fit in a small closet. I've been in fellow hams. Shacks that are palatial, you know, really, the whole spare bedroom turned into a shack with monitors everywhere and 6 and 7 radios, all of them, you know, you could run a small DX. Well, that would be, what do you call it, Chad, when you're doing an expedition locally?
I don't recall, Larry. KO4NUE. I should know, but I don't. I think about that.
It's not something you hear a lot of talk about, but among some groups of hams, they'll get away to say a cabin in North Carolina. Good exposure, decent altitude, set up 3 or 4 antennas, and a room full of radios and monitors and such, and just go at it, you know. And do that over an entire weekend, or go down Friday and come back late Sunday, you know, and just pile up the contacts. And it's not DX, but there is a phrase for it, and it escapes me right now. I knew a ham, really good friends with a ham who used to do this several times, members of a DX club. Here in the area, and he went along with them his first time, and had a great time. Kind of an unusual thing, but it's what you do if you don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars and want to go to an exotic island in you know, off of Antarctica. You know, that's an expedition. Maybe the term will come to me in time, but that's a cool idea, you know, and it's something people do.
So that reminds me, I got something I've been wanting to tell you, and it slips my mind every time I get on the net. But a couple weeks ago, the state. On an emergency management division down in Columbia, was putting on a class for, you know, some of the hams, anybody, any ham in the state, actually, to, it was, they had a class. It was Advanced Ham Radio Operations and OxCom, which is state, you know, emergency. So I went down there for the class and got to see the emergency commands, you know, went in the radio room, got to see, you know, the radios and how all that's set up with, you know, communications. Absolutely amazing. I was just amazed. So later on after lunch, we broke away from class session and we went to different stations. We had to do different things at different stations. So we went at one of the stations. We had to go in the radio room and use the state radios. We had to send and receive a wind link message. We had to do DMR, make a contact on DMR, make a contact on the SC Heart blink repeater system, and make a HF contact. So the guy before me he had his general license for a couple of years. Let me have my radio drop, Larry. He's sitting before me, and you know, the radio that they had there in the radio room was this really nice Kenwood. I mean, you know, big TS-990. You know, just this monster. You know. So K4, the state amateur operator's call is I think it's KM4ED. I can't remember. But he's the licensed ham that runs the OxCom down there. And so the guy in front of me doing the, you know, general, you know, he had his general license for some time, but had never made a HF contact. So we had to go through all of these radio stations and a radio, you know, DMR and things like that. And he sat down in front of the radio and just, he sat there for, I don't know, about 5, 6, 7 minutes. Finally, the guy in the radio room says, well, look, you know, if you're going to have to move on to the next station and just take a hit on this one if you don't know how to run radio. So he grabbed the mic and tuned to a frequency, grabbed the mic, and, you know, the high SWR went off on the radio, and he said, nope, you're done. you know, if you can't tune the antenna, then, you know, just, you know, next. So I sat down and, you know, got the antenna tuned. It took me a couple minutes, but I heard a QSO, a guy calling for CQ, and there was a pileup, and the guy over the radio room says, yeah, you might want to move to another station because that guy's just too many people there on the pileup. So I reached over and I grabbed the mic gain layer and I just turned the mic gain as high as I could get it and threw my call sign out there. I got fessed at by 5 or 6 people for, you know, overdriving the mic, but I did make the contact. I got his call sign and I made the contact. So I was hooping and hollering in the radio room and everybody was laughing, but I did it.
You're the kind of guy that can have a grand time at a cakewalk. And that reference goes back too far, I think. But, yeah, I'm glad to hear it. And you do, it sort of sounded like, maybe because you saw the guy previous to you, he got a little bit tangled up and just, you know, stomped the accelerator and pushed on through. That was probably a good example. And I don't know. in an emergency, you do have to push on through. You do have to do whatever it takes. I don't think that calls for discipline. I'm glad everybody had a good time with it.
The people that were trying to get through the pileup, they were the ones that were fussing. One guy said, you cheating, you're overdriving the mic, and da da da. Well, I didn't say anything, but I'm just grinning from ear to ear, and I'm thinking to myself, hey, I made the contact, you didn't. So I got to move on to the next station. Do what you got to do, right?
Do what you got to do. And that's the jacket you wear. I think sometimes it's metaphorical perhaps, but sometimes to get me in the frame of me, I imagine putting on another jacket, putting on a different jacket. If life throws you a curve and you have to take a turn from the person that you would ordinarily be and just be somebody else, that in you, I'm proud that it just pops out of me too. A lot of folks can't. Completely befuddled. And if they speak at all, it doesn't come out right. I'd rather have the person that's going to get it done around me. If it's a serious situation, I want somebody around who's going to push on through. KK4JDQ.
So, but anyway, we had a good time with it, and the training lasted till, three or four in the afternoon, I think. But I was really impressed with all of the radio gear that they had and, things like that. But it was a good training day. But I think I'll go back for another class, I think. But they offer free classes all over the state, all you got to do is just, show up. You got to be a licensed operator, of course, but I really enjoyed that. I think I'll go to the next one they offer. But Larry, I'm gonna go ahead and bring it to a close. I'm starting to show my tired a little bit. I worked with a couple of club members today. I meant to ask you, did you get my video?
No, I did not. But that was sent, perhaps it was sent to my phone, and I'm having trouble with my phone. And maybe that's the answer I should give. It might be time for a new one. I hate that. I'm probably 7, 8, 9, 10, I don't know if they skipped a number, 11, 12, 13. I'm quite a few radios, or telephones, I'm quite a few telephones behind because I just like the one that I have, Don't need to have a different one. But I will, I don't know, if that was sent and only available on the phone, I hate to show my ignorance. I really do. But here I am. I'm showing it. And I can't be proud that I don't know whether messages can be received on in any way. I don't think it can be received on the computer. The computer's working fine, but the phone is crapping out. It's off and on. I mean, it's buggy, whatever. I think Apple does this. Maybe not. But it's long in the tooth. I don't want a spoiler, but generally, what was the topic of the little movie?
The beam up with one of the club members today. Miss Ann and Steve, they're in the T-Bark Club. So we put a 2-meter beam up today, and but we put the rotator down on the ground, well, about 3 feet off the ground, and then I made a bracket down in the shop that screws to the eave of the house, and the pole that the beam is on goes through that bracket. If you get to see the video, you see exactly what I'm talking about, but keeps all that weight off the top of the pole, and if you need to work on the rotator, it's down low, so you don't have to, struggle with getting all that stuff 30 feet up in the air. That's just difficult. So I mounted mine down low here at the house, and I love it like that. I don't think I'll ever put another rotator up high. I just does not make sense to me, I guess.